Hello once again and welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your host, Katie Britton. It's the beer show today, and as usual, we have our wonderful panel in the studio with us. George DePiro is the co-owner and brewmaster at Druthers in Saratoga Springs, New York. Paul McRulane is brewmaster at Mendocino Brewing Company in Saratoga Springs. And finally, we'd like to welcome a new voice to the show, Russell Savoy. It's from Homebrew Emporium in Rensselaer, New York, and there's also Cambridge, West Boylston, and South Weymouth in Massachusetts. Hello, Russell.
Hi, nice to be here.
So if you would like to call and ask your questions about beer and brewing, we always have a full board, so call in soon. The number is 800-34-TALK-1. That's 1-800-348-2551. All right, gentlemen. George, you have Druthers now.
I do, yes. I've changed locations, and it's a lot of fun, I have to say. The beginning was stressful. We opened in Saratoga Springs on August 1st, and I don't advise opening a restaurant on August 1st in Saratoga Springs, but brew pubs don't open when they're ready. They open when they have to.
And in racing season.
Right. Well, and, you know, the bank account was dry, so it's time to start shifting products so that we could have cash flow. And we got through it, and none of us died, so it was okay. And now it's a more comfortable pace, and things are going pretty well.
So what are you brewing up there?
All sorts of things. It's most fun for a brewpub brewer, I think, in the first year of operation, because you don't know what your customers are going to want to buy, and they don't have expectations yet, because you're brand new. So you can make different styles every 2 weeks and see what works, what doesn't work. So right now, I brought a stout that's got some coffee added to it, a Weizen Doppelbock, which is a strong German-style wheat beer, and an India Pale Ale, which is kind of ubiquitous these days. Everybody's got an India Pale Ale. But I think it came out pretty good, so I brought it.
Excellent. Paul, what's happening up there in Saratoga with you?
Oh, all sorts of things. I brought a bunch of beer here, some old beer, some new beer, some seasonal beer, some anniversary beer that we make for a contract brewer. We make, like George, I have a lot of fun because I make probably 70 different beers a year. So, those change, some percentage of that changes every year. Some fraction of it is new all the time. And it keeps us happy and keeps us from getting bored.
Insane.
Yes. Which can happen in a production plant sometimes.
All right. So 1-800-348-2551, that's 1-800-34-TALK-1. I think we're trying to figure out what's happening with the mic. And Paul, why don't we start with one of your brews, and if you could tell us a little bit about it.
Okay, we'll start with our Mendocino Oatmeal Stout, which is kind of a light-bodied, easy drinking. I say light-bodied, it's not light-bodied, it's pretty full-bodied, but it's very easy to drink. Lower alcohol beer, 5.5 to 6%.
That's lower alcohol.
Which is lower alcohol these days. I don't know. It's just a nice, easy to drink stout. It's got a little residual sweetness. I think it's probably a little sweeter than George's, but no coffee. Just the coffee flavors from the malt that's in there.
It has a nice aroma.
It does.
I'm holding it up to the microphone to see
if people
can smell it out in radio land. But
we have a lot of fun making this beer, and we make it throughout the autumn months, and it's kind of our winter seasonal. Next year there'll be a pumpkin, I think, as the autumn seasonal. People seem to really want pumpkin beer.
That's do. It's a big thing this year.
It really is.
Well, in the past few years, I've seen more and more.
Did you make a pumpkin beer?
No, I don't like them. I mean,
I'm not a huge fan of them either.
You don't taste the pumpkin. You just taste
the
spices.
Small amounts.
You have to use a lot of pumpkin to taste the pumpkin.
And
sometimes you can, and you'll be able to taste the pumpkin in hours.
What I did was I made an apple beer instead, and that got spiced with cinnamon and orange peel and a couple of other things. And selling super duper well. I didn't bring it, but
come on, you're killing us here.
I'm sorry.
1-800-348-2551. That's 1-800-34-TALK-1 to ask your questions about beer or tell us what you're working on at home, what kind of beer you're brewing. And that's where you come in, Russell.
Yes. So call in. We're waiting for the questions.
Well, what are you? What have you been working on
Well,
personally?
We're going to be expanding our store. We're going to be knocking down, adding about another 1,000 square feet. Besides that, we're just trying to get our new warehouse going. It's allowed us to really expand our product line and allowed me to brew a little bit more. I got some cider going, which I brought some in today. And just brewing some more beer so we can make it through the winter.
Actually, I have a question for you. What are people brewing at home these days, this time of year?
Well, I mean, this time of year, they have mud rooms or cold rooms that are, you know, turning cold because they're not heating it. So a lot of people actually will start making lagers this time of year. Even though it's past Oktoberfest, you still have a lot of people that are making it because it is still a very delicious beer. We'll start to see people making lagers and stuff like that. Like George says, you know, IPAs, everybody has them. Everybody makes them. It's pretty much becoming classic, you know.
Although it's becoming hard to get hops.
Yes,
it is becoming hard to get hops. But it's great to hear that people are making lagers because people should drink more lager beer.
Yes. It's hard to find a good American Pilsner or lager sometimes.
Sometimes it is.
Actually, I've got a Pilsner on right now that I like. It's made with Amarillo hops, which are virtually impossible to get now, and it's got a nice citrusy grapefruit note to it. And yet, very German otherwise. Dry, light malt flavor. But I didn't bring that either. So. I'll just keep talking about beers I didn't bring to the show.
Well, let's go to Casey in Saratoga. Hi, Casey. Okay, well, Casey is gone now.
Had a question about how to make pumpkin ale, is what the card said.
So you said a lot of pumpkin?
A lot of pumpkin if you want the pumpkin to come through. So we make some beers in a 100-barrel batch. Most people are using 400 or 500 pounds of pumpkin, and it still doesn't come through. So you really need to use a great deal of pumpkin. I mean, I think I remember back in my brewpub days using a couple of 100 pounds of pumpkin in a 10-barrel batch.
Right.
You know,
that's a lot.
Small batch, personal.
For a personal batch, you'd probably use about 6 to 10 pounds of pumpkin.
Really?
You would want to use these small sugar pumpkins or pie pumpkins. They give you the best flavor. And then generally you'd actually roast it in your oven to kind of help bring out the flavor and the starches.
Ooh, kind of like give it that nutty flavor roasting
that does.
That's
how I always did it at home. Roast it in the oven, you get it all nice and brown, you get a little caramelization going on, scoop it out, mash it up, throw it in.
So if you were lazy, though, and wanted to
use
canned?
Puree,
you can.
Yep. But it's available year-round. That's the nice thing. So if you want to make it sometime other than, you know, the 1 or 2 months of pumpkin season, you'd be able to do it.
I'll warn you if you're an extract brewer as opposed to doing all mash, you can't make a pumpkin beer because there's the starch in the pumpkin will just stay starch, and brewer's yeast can't eat it. And bacteria and wild yeast can. So you'll end up bottling this beer that's extremely hazy and starchy tasting, and you won't like it, and it'll sit in your basement for a year or two, and then the bottles will start to explode.
But here's what you can do.
I've done this. That's
here's what you can do. You can make a nice amber ale, throw some spices in it, you know, some cinnamon, some nutmeg, a little clove if you like that, and some people even use a little vanilla in their pumpkin beer. And then you hollow out a pumpkin, and you put your beer in the pumpkin. Get a big one. Jam a spigot in its mouth, and you're on your way.
Oh, that's a neat idea.
Pumpkin beer.
I like that.
That's pretty cool. All right, so there's a lot of pumpkin questions.
that's why Paul was laughing.
So, Kelly in Saratoga. Hi, Kelly.
Hi.
So what is your question for the boys?
Well, my husband Casey was the one who had called in earlier and previously asked about the pumpkin ale. We had tried brewing one last fall with some pumpkin and butternut squash that we grew, and the beer tasted great, but it didn't taste like pumpkin at all, and we were wondering how to really get that pumpkin flavor.
Use more pumpkin. And as we were saying before, if you roast it in the oven and get some of those flavors working, and then, get as much pumpkin there as you can. Are you doing a whole all grain, or is it extract like George was describing before?
My husband would be the one to ask about that. I'm not sure. I'm the grower. But that's the second half of my question, is that we're also planning on putting in a hop yard on our small farm, and we were wondering what kind of varieties of hops are popular right now and that brewers would be looking for.
Amarillo, but you can't get it.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to grow what brewers want, is the unfortunate thing, because the guy who owns it doesn't share.
Well, actually, they just started doing it on another farm, but it's going to be, you know, years before it's really up in there in the demands there. Probably the most safest one to go for, Beer Hobby Cascade. You can use it for really bittering or aroma, and it has a great yield, and it's probably one of the more popular ones. If you want some more information, there's an organization called Northeast Hop Alliance, and they can actually show you how much it costs to put in, you know, hops per acre and what you need to do, and they have a lot more resources there.
Okay, great.
Thanks for calling, Kelly.
Thank you.
So what are we drinking now?
Oh, I passed around stout that has a little coffee added to it, excellent. And it's a cleverly named Druthers Stout. So
not Druthers Coffee Stout.
I guess maybe I'll do that.
You should do that.
Yeah, okay. There we go. That's how I decide what to name my beers. I just
put Druthers in front of it.
Yeah. No, we were trying to be much better and more creative than that. Some of our beers now have better names than I came up with in the past. Some of them are mine. Some of them were the work of other people. And yeah, it's all about marketing. Mm-hmm. So trying to learn that as I grow up.
And if you haven't been following this for a while, George is pretty good at making beer, but pretty bad at naming beers.
Yeah,
so,
it's true. You didn't think Pump Station Pale was a brilliant, creative name?
A little alliteration. That was good. That was a good one. One of your better efforts.
Well, this has a nice explosive coffee taste as soon as it hits your palate.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just dissipates, which is really nice because then you can drink more of it.
And like Paul Stout, it's considered low alcohol these days, I guess, at about 5.6%.
Mm-hmm. Easy drinking.
Yeah. It is interesting how in the American brewing world today, like, low alcohol is just not what people want.
You should call it Druthers Session Stout.
There we go.
All right. Well, we need to take a quick break. James, stay on the line, and we'll get to you in 1 minute.
Support comes from Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine, New York, providing eye exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, glaucoma management, and specialty contact lens fitting. Where eyewear is an art, Facebook or 845-336-6310. Capcom Federal Credit Union, offering home mortgages, auto loans, checking, financial planning, and more. CapcomFCU.org. Ashokan Center, Olive Bridge, New York, a classroom in the wild helping schools, organizations, and individuals reconnect with nature, history, and the arts. AshokanCenter.org. And the Nature Conservancy's Adirondack Chapter, working to protect ecologically important lands and waters of the Adirondacks for nature and people. Nature.org/Adirondacks.
Welcome back to Vox Pop. It is beer and brewing today, and we have George DePiro, Paul McRaleen, and Russell Savoy here to answer your questions about beer and brewing, and we want to know what you are brewing. So we're going to go to James in Niskayuna right now. Hi, James.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. So what do you have going?
Well, I've been brewing for a few years. For the fall, I have a nut brown ale that I have going. I just kegged it up about 2 weeks ago, and it's mellowed out very nicely. For Christmas time, my kids get to vote on what we make next, and they voted for an oatmeal stout. So
excellent.
But I'm glad to hear you guys back on the air. I appreciate it. In fact, we were at the pump station the other bit, and I just discovered that George moved a few months ago.
Yep.
And so we have to go up to Saratoga to try out your new beers and at your new place.
Well, thank you. And you're kind of halfway between the two places in Niskayuna there.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so that's not too bad. You've got your
the best of
kind,
both
yeah, you're
worlds.
Equidistant from two nice brew pubs now. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Not only that, we have a nice tasting room. You could hit both of those places in one trip.
So what did you put in for that nut ale, James?
The nut brown ale?
Mm-hmm.
It's really a standard kind of a recipe, but I keep the hops down. My wife doesn't like a lot of hops, so so I like it fairly low hops, sort of a malty sweetness at the finish. So it's fairly classic for a nut brown ale.
Sounds good. I'm with your wife on the not a lot of hops.
And this is the time of year I like to keg everything, because I could just keep the kegs out in my garage, and I always have fresh beer, cold, right there.
Mm, sounds perfect.
Easy to get to.
In my opinion, it's always time to keg beer. Bottling gets very repetitive very fast.
Quickly.
Yeah. When I started homebrewing, my first batch came out good. My next two batches weren't so good because I was trying to be more experimental than my knowledge really allowed. But I moved to kegging on batch number four. And if I hadn't, I don't think I would have stuck with the hobby, and then I wouldn't be sitting here, because bottling is just a drag.
That you say that, because I start bottling again in May when it starts getting warm, because I find it just convenient. But I stop as soon as I can, as soon as it's cool enough to keep the keg in my garage, I stop.
Oh,
I see, because you don't have refrigeration, right?
No, I don't need to drink enough beer.
A kegerator.
Yeah, I don't drink enough beer for that.
Or even cheaper is you go out, you just go and buy a cheap chest freezer and a separate thermostat that you wire to the power cord of the chest freezer so that it stays above freezing.
Yes.
And you can keep your kegs in that.
Yeah, I'm looking at George saying, I don't know about all that.
Oh, I do it myself. It's very easy to do. They actually sell things you can actually just, even simpler than George says, you can actually just plug it into your outlet, and it'll actually just stop the compressor from turning on until it's at a set temperature range. No fooling around with wires, just plug in and install.
There you go.
They're also more energy efficient than a regular upright refrigerator would be. So,
And they tend to be cheap, too.
Yeah, they usually are.
Chest freezers are not a lot of money. So
no, they aren't.
I think you're ready for that next step in your home room. And think about how patriotic you are, helping the American economy by buying things.
You can visit eBay.
There you go.
James, thank you so much for your call today.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Bye.
1-800-348-2551. That's 1-800-34-TALK-1. So, Russ, what do we have here?
This is a mild ale. It's a very low alcohol, as they would probably put it, for today's standards. It's probably only about 3.5 to 4% alcohol, something that you could drink a lot of, especially during the summer. A lot of it, generally, you see it in other English.
Hoppy. For my say, yeah. I'm not a big hop person, so.
But yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that you'd get with a session beer would be hoppiness, mm-hmm. because it is very low malty and very low hard alcohol.
Now, for you, is that a bitterness thing or just a flavor thing?
Bitterness.
Okay. Then you might be okay with this. What I'm opening now is our Imperial, our new double IPA called Talon.
Oh, very nice.
We used to have a beer years ago called Talon, which was a barley wine, and we have resurrected the label. I'm holding labels up to the microphone now. Can everyone see that?
One has a black background and one has a red background.
The old one has a red background. The new one has a black background. And this is a 10% alcohol by volume double IPA that has 5.5 pounds of hops per barrel in it, which is a lot of hops.
That's a lot of hops.
It's a lot of hops.
And you think Katie's going to like this after she just said she doesn't like hops?
I'm thinking that Katie doesn't really like bitter.
Right.
And there is a difference.
Because this beer has a lot of malt, so there's a lot of there's some residual sweetness. There's alcohol, which is also sweet at this level.
It has a little bit of kind of like florery.
And that's the aromatics.
The aroma hops are key to this sort of a beer. So.
Oh.
It's not for everyone.
No.
But it is for people who really love hops.
Mm-hmm. I can appreciate it. I can absolutely appreciate it.
So you can just sit there and smell it.
I smell it, exactly, because I do enjoy the aroma of it.
It is very hoppy. So
very, very aromatic, very flavorful, and, 10%, not to be trifled with.
So we're going to go down to Albany now, and we have Jessica on the line. Good afternoon, Jessica.
Hi, how are you?
We're doing well, thank you. So what are you looking for?
Hard cider. Everywhere you go, almost every bar or restaurant, they offer you woodchuck, and I want to vomit. And I was just curious, does anybody brew their own hard cider, and where would I find good quality hard cider?
Well, I don't think that I can think of anybody off the top of my head locally that makes it. There are alternatives to woodchuck, like Longbow. But one of the easiest things you can do is you can actually make it yourself. There's lots of orchards in the area that offer either non-pasteurized or what you'll probably find is UV pasteurized, and it's pretty easy to make your own cider. It's basically just, you know, cider, yeast, and, you know, if you want to throw some spices in there, maybe cinnamon or nutmeg to get kind of like an apple pie flavor, you can do that as well.
There is a Warwick Valley Winery down in Orange County is as local as I know that's making hard cider, and we sometimes offer their cider at Druthers. I know the pump station tries to offer it too. The problem is the distributor doesn't always have it. So sometimes we've got it, sometimes we don't. And I do think it's not the most consistent product, but when it's good, it's quite a bit better than woodchuck, and you would probably be pleased. But I think Russell's right. Make it yourself.
Make it yourself, yeah. There are there is another alternative locally, which is they're not necessarily a local company, Angry Orchards, which I believe is Boston Beer Company.
Right, the Sam Adams people
put
it out.
And that's pretty good.
I didn't mind it when I tried it. I mean, I'm not a hard cider fan, but it wasn't bad.
And if you like cider, you should really try to find some Perry. There are some pear ciders out there that are really tasty as well. There's a company called Pace. I don't know if you can get it here. I know you can get it on the West Coast. They make some really nice pear ciders, and they should be findable here too, I would think, you know, some pear ciders.
And the aforementioned Warwick Valley Winery also makes pear cider.
Oh, so I'm going to have to get some.
That's in fact, what we sell at Druthers is really just determined by what the distributor has. If they have the pear, I order the pear. If they have the apple, that's what I order.
Then I'll have to try it. Thank you very much.
Well, good luck, Jessica.
Bye-bye.
800-348-2551. That's 1-800-348-2551. We're going over to Daryl in Plattsburgh. Hi, Daryl.
Hi there. How are you?
All right. So what are you, Hefeweizen?
Yeah, I love the European Hefeweizen. I've met George and had his down at the pump station. And I'm wondering, is it true, George, that if you have water that's kind of like Munich water, pretty hard, you ought to cut it a little bit with distilled water, maybe half and half, to make a good European Hefe? That's my feeling, but I need confirmation.
Yeah, if you're going to make a light-colored one, then water with high residual alkalinity like Munich or like Saratoga doesn't work without something else being done. You could dilute the water with distilled water. You could add calcium salts to the water. Or you could do what I'm doing at Druthers, which is use something called sour malt. Sour malt is barley malt that's been either sprayed with naturally made lactic acid or steeped until lactic acid bacteria that live on the malt metabolize it a little bit, make the lactic acid, and then they dry the malt, and that'll lower the pH of your mash so that you can successfully make a light-colored beer in water that's got high residual alkalinity.
And the sour malt, would it make your Hefe taste more like a wit or not?
No, because it doesn't take that much of it. You're not going to taste sourness from it, but it's just going to be enough to offset the alkalinity of the water. You know, for Saratoga water, it works out to be about 5.6 kilograms of in a very light-colored beer of sour malt for every 500 kilograms of malt. I think I did the math right. Yeah, that's about right.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
It's like 1%. Okay.
Thanks.
Have fun, Daryl.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
No, sour malt. You're talking about acidulated malt?
Yeah.
Exactly. And that would be the German way to do it.
Yeah.
The American way to do it would just to be, you know, would be to throw some lactic acid in the mash or some phosphoric acid.
You could do that.
You can do that as well. It has to be food grade, of course. But I like the sour malt. I think it gives a nice result.
And it's just, it's so fun to be able to be Reinheitsgebot about things.
And it smells so good.
It does.
Especially when you're milling it.
The one thing I'll warn people is I tried making a sour beer once when I was still at the pump station, a Berliner Weisse. This was the Goza that I made. And I wanted it, I didn't have time for bacteria to make the beer sour. So I thought, I'll just use sour malt to make the beer sour. It's clever, right? And you know, I learned in brewing school that you can't. No. They say you don't want the mash pH to be too low, but nobody ever told me why. So I was like, "What the heck? I'll see what happens." What happens is the mash turns into concrete, and you can't actually run any liquid through it.
Oh, geez.
So yeah, that was a big mess. That's the result.
Your mash pH down to?
It was below 4. It was like 3.9 or something like that. Yeah, it was really low. And so I ended up making, instead of 10 barrels of beer, I think I made 4. And people liked it, though. But yeah, I won't make it like that again.
I feel like a lot of beers that you've made that have screwed your mash up people have really enjoyed. Your chestnut porter, I believe, was also like...
Yeah, that one was a nightmare. Chestnuts really screw up your mash that way, too. Yeah. And then one I made as a home brewer... I did a rye beer that I fermented with Hefeweizen and yeast. The mash was so hard to run water through that I put what I could get. It was very cloudy, the wort that I got, because I just stirred the mash the whole time to get the liquid through, and I put it in the fridge. Kind of forgot about it for a week, got back to it, and it had gone sour in the fridge, but it was pleasantly sour. So I said, you know, what the heck? I boiled it. That killed off all the bacteria, cooled it off, fermented it with the Hefeweizen yeast, and it was one of the best beers I've ever made. And I'll never duplicate that. I need the bacteria from that refrigerator. Right. So
that's pretty wild.
Well, we're going to go down to Rhinebeck now and Peter. Hi, Peter.
Hi there.
So what question do you have for the gentleman?
Well, I have a friend who is gluten intolerant. And wanted to find out if you could offer some advice about home brewing gluten-free beer. I don't really know much about home brewing, but I thought that might be an interesting question.
It's actually not going to be really any different than brewing beer with gluten. You just need to find a base that's gluten-free. What we carry, and probably most other homebrew stores would carry, is sorghum. And
uh-huh.
It generally comes in the same size as the barley does.
Uh-huh.
The hops are gluten-free, and the yeast is gluten-free. But sorghum, tapioca, and stuff like that, they do have off flavors that are much different than beer, and it does take some getting used to and some time to figure
out. Yeah, it does. It tends to have a little bit of an aftertaste, I find.
Yes, and that's going to be the sorghum. You can also use tapioca, but none of these bases really have any really, you know, malt flavor that you know that you're probably looking for.
I wonder do you carry there's a product called Brewer's Crystals, which is a corn sugar product which has got a maltose. It's very heavy maltose content.
Yeah, it's like 55% maltose, 45%.
I bet you that's gluten-free.
Well, sometimes the problem with like it may be gluten-free in theory is it's like oats. Oats are gluten-free, but the way that farmers grow is you still get barley that grows in the oat fields. So even though oats are gluten-free, a lot of times there's still barley in there. So it's...
Right, there's cross-contamination.
Yes, exactly. So we have to find out by asking their supplier.
Yeah.
But
okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Peter. And we're going to get one more in. We're going to go to Rob and Troy. Hi, Rob.
Hi. I have a couple of questions, actually. Right now I'm brewing a smoked porter and a rye IPA, and I'll probably be bottling them next week. And I don't particularly enjoy bottling myself, so I've been thinking about going into kegging, but I was wondering how long a 5-gallon batch will last once it's kegged. Is it kind of in the same amount of time as in bottles, or does it have to be consumed more quickly?
Depends on a lot of factors. It depends on how clean you are, how clean you know you get the keg, how clean your lines are, how cold you keep it, how much air you're getting in the keg. There are all sorts of factors involved with that. if you do everything right and keep the beer cold, it can last for quite a while, months and months. Yeah. But if you do something wrong, then you've got, you know, 5 gallons of bad beer.
Yeah, in my experience, it's actually much easier to keep oxygen away from the beer when you're kegging than when you're bottling.
It should be.
Because
it should be.
If you, I should do the disclaimer, maybe don't try this at home, but what I used to do as a home brewer is I would fill my kegs with boiling water right up to the very top,
ooh,
close them up, and then blow the boiling water out with carbon dioxide so that the keg was sterile or close to it and then completely anaerobic. And then I would siphon the beer into it right through that same hose that I just blasted the boiling water out through. And so the beer never saw air at all. And it'll last for quite some time that way.
So let me ask you a question, though. Is this a filtered beer or an unfiltered beer?
Mine?
Yes.
Unfiltered.
So for that, I think George is being a little anal.
Me?
Can I say that?
I can't believe
it. You could just as easily use cold water, and you know, you'd have 99.99% of the oxygen would be out of that container. George is boiling the water to make sure there's not even a molecule of oxygen left.
And
you don't really need to go
sanitary.
That length. And it's sanitary. Sanitary is good. But the risk of the tubing can give away. There are all sorts of things that can go wrong with that, and you can get scalded, which I don't advise.
Yeah,
I'm learning to be sanitary. When I was first brewing 30 years ago, I was a good deal less careful than I am now. But it's just trying to avoid the bottling, which is the big thing. But you know, I could deal with that for a while.
If you want to cut back on your bottling, I might also suggest larger bottles. They have 1 liter flip top bottles, which are great. You only have to do 19 for a batch of beer. You know, 22 is also great.
I kind of like the 12-ounce bottles just for the serving size.
Oh, I completely agree. I'm just putting suggestions out there.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking about it. It's something that's on the list now, along with a zillion other things. The other question is, what, if any, books would you recommend just for general practices as well as for some recipes? I've seen a couple of books in the local libraries. I don't know whether one is better or worse than the other. I have some people who are planning on taking up some home brewing, and I'd like to be, with Christmas coming, it would be good to...
Depending on how much you like these people and what you want to spend, I think Technology Brewing and Malting by Wolfgang Kunze is fabulous textbook, but it's aimed at college students that are studying brewing. So it goes into more detail about many things than the average home brewer wants, but it's a really great book with a section on malting that is so thorough, you will absolutely seek out some barley seed and make your own malt next year.
I might consider that.
Because I did that. I read this book and I said, I have to make my own malt now.
Mm-hmm.
It is a couple of $100, like $240 probably, because it's meant for professional level or college students. But for yourself or somebody you really care about, it's a pretty cool book.
If you wanted a basic book, I would suggest something more like The Complete Joy of Homebrewing by Charlie Papazian or Dave Miller's How to Brew.
I always like Dave Miller's books. Yeah.
There's a couple other ones out there. John Palmer has one as well.
That's a good one.
That's, I think, How to Brew or something like that.
Do you have all of those at Homebrew?
Yeah, we have those. We have a couple other books that I'm just drawing a blank on right now. Designing Great Beer is another one.
Okay. I was just there earlier this afternoon, but I will.
Now you've got to go back.
Again. Now you'll be going back.
It's not far from Troy.
That's how we get you.
Right.
All right, Rob, thank you so much for your call.
Bye-bye.
1-800-348-2551. We have to take another quick break, and John, stay on the line. We'll get to you right afterwards.
Support comes from Hildene, the Lincoln Family Home, Manchester, Vermont. Featuring a 1912 Christmas in the historic home for the month of December, open daily year-round 9:30 to 4:30. Hildene.org. St. George's School, Clifton Park, New York, a private elementary school offering full-day academic programs to kindergarten and first-grade students. stgeorgecp.org. East Heaven Hot Tubs and Paradise Spa, Northampton, Massachusetts, offering private hot tub room rentals with indoor or outdoor rooftop tubs, massage for couples and individuals, eastheaven.com for reservations. And Old Songs Concerts, Worriesville, New York, presenting folk quartet Work of the Weavers tomorrow and Saturday at 8 p.m. oldsongs.org.
Welcome back to Vox Pop. It is the beer show, and we are talking about different beers and brewing. And we have, I have a couple different kinds. So, John, just if you could be really patient, we'll get to you in just 1 second. George, what you have handed out, bananas, just like
yeah, big time.
Filled the smell and then my taste buds once I tasted it.
It's a Weizen Doppelbock, and it's a pretty fun style that you don't see made that much here in the United States. I don't know why. It's just a strong, dark version of a Hefeweizen. And the stronger you make the more sugar that's in the wort, the more fruitiness you tend to get out of that special yeast that makes the banana and clove flavor mm-hmm. in a Hefeweizen. This was also helped along by a pitching temperature that I was higher than I wanted. because I wanted a little less banana character than this. Mm-hmm. But at the end, I'm pretty happy with it. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's very fruity, and it gives it nice character. It's also about 8.5% alcohol. And the one thing I'll mention, though, about Weizen yeast, aside from the banana character and the ethanol that it makes, it's making other alcohols that are larger in molecular weight than ethanol, and they tend to really exaggerate a hangover. So if you overindulge with Hefeweizen or especially Weizenbock, it will hurt the next day like you've never been hurt before.
Like the Dickens.
Yeah.
I'll have to change my favorite beers then.
No. It's the beer to have when you're not going to
when you're not having more than one.
We're tasting and enjoying one, right.
Right.
To let it flow on the palate.
It forces moderation.
Yes. Well, that is good.
It is.
All right, John, you've been so patient. So, hi, John. How are you today?
Very well, thanks. How are you?
We're doing well. So you want to talk ciders?
I do, but I also just wanted to have a general question, you know, for all the WAMC Vox Pop hosts. Do you guys, like, fight it out to see who gets to host this one?
We do.
There's a wrestling pit here. You should have seen it.
I bet. It's because Ray has to hear all these people sort of ranting about politics, and here you are having a banana beer.
I'm lucky.
So my question was, has anybody there, the panel, have they tried the Johnny Mash cider? Do you know what that is?
I have not.
No, I haven't.
Johnny Mash. Okay. Anyway, it's made here, or right near here, in Richmond, Massachusetts, at a place called Hilltop Orchards, which is, as it sounds, you know, a great place to get apples and all kinds of things that orchards sell, honey and all kinds of stuff. But their cider is out of sight. Really, really good. Well worth the trip. I mean, it's very right over the border. We're still on Route 41, and you're almost there. So that's my suggestion, is if you're looking for a good local cider, not too far away, reasonable, all kinds of other groovy stuff that you can get at this orchard. Hilltop Orchards in Richmond is the place to go.
Excellent. Thank you so much, John.
Okay.
Have a good
day. Thanks again. Bye-bye.
All right. Now, during the break, Paul, you have passed over a delightfully just, it's almost like a wine kind of that taste to it.
It is. It's the Jubilation 16, which is the Schmaltz Brewing Company's 16th anniversary beer. It sort of harkens back to their 8th anniversary beer, which was a kind of an imperial nut brown. This is more like a quad nut brown. It's 16% ABV. It's got a little nuttiness in the background that you can taste, and it's you know, it's not like a stout really at all. It's
no, but it's got the roastiness.
It's got a little roastiness.
It's a little bit there.
There's a little roastiness because there's some chocolate malt in there for sure, but there's also some nutty sort of biscuity kind of malts in there, a little toasty. There's a bunch of Munich malt in there. And it just is, there's a lot of alcohol. And unlike the alcohols that George was just talking about, there isn't really a lot of higher alcohols. So you can drink this and not get a headache. Well, it is kind of self-limiting. After you have a couple of them, you're going to fall asleep. And that's probably a good thing.
It's sweet.
It is sweet. There's a residual sweetness to it that makes it nice and, you know, smooth and rich, and it's just luscious. I'll get that out in your mouth. It's
perfect for one of those blizzard nights.
Oh, absolutely.
Where, you know, you can't even make it down the street to the local pub.
So instead of a hot toddy, you have this.
Right. Yeah. And this is the kind of beer that I would pour into maybe a brandy snifter and hold it in your hand and let it warm up and, you know, maybe not have a open flame near it. But
there are unicorns on the label.
I was thinking of how people candle their drinks sometimes.
Most beers should be drunk fresh, but some stronger dark ones can take age, and I bet you this one would be really good for like 2, maybe even 3 years.
And I think this will develop a lot of, you know, sort of dark, dried fruit flavors in time, and a little, you know, sherry notes probably will.
But if you let it go too long, the wonderful malt flavors that you're tasting now will just fade away and become sherry-like. And there's a point where the malt is gone and the sherry is dominating, and I don't like beers when they've gotten that far.
Some people do, though.
Right. And so it's what you have to do is buy a case of it or
and
four.
And keep tasting it.
And just taste a little bit. And when it gets to the point that you think, wow, this is just awesome, then you have a party.
Then you have a party. I was just going to suggest that.
Do you want to have a party or just hoard it to yourself and take a week off of work if it's really that great?
Well, I suggest having a party. It's more fun to drink with friends.
Right. Share the experience of the taste of it.
Apparently, Russell's a little selfish.
800-348-2551. That's 1-800-34-TALK-1. And we've got Jack in Schenectady. Hi, Jack.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Sure. I have a question regarding the differences between draft beer and bottled beer. There's nothing I like better than a nice cold draft beer. And whenever I get the same type of beer in a bottle, it's never, ever the same. Even in these containers that some of the, some of the other places have that advertise as draft beer, it never really tastes the same. What really is the difference between the draft and the bottle?
Well, there's a couple of differences. As George was describing earlier, it's a lot easier to get all of the oxygen out of a keg than it is out of a bottle. When you're putting beer in bottles or cans, there is a point at which the beer comes off of the filling head and it's exposed to air. Even in very high speed canning or bottling lines, there is a point where this happens, and so air can get in at that point, and air can get in the evacuation process. So we have a very expensive bottling line at my brewery that does what's called a double pre-evacuation. It pulls all the air, all the gas out of the bottle, and puts in CO2, and then it pulls all of that out again and puts in more CO2, and counter pressures it and fills it, and that gets out, you know, almost all of the air, but there's still a little bit in there. When you fill a keg, you can very effectively get the air out of there because it's a multi-stage process. So our keg machine, for instance, does, you know, there's a caustic clean, then there's a caustic soak where it's filled with hot caustic, and then that's pushed out with steam, and then it does an acid and acid cleaning. Then that's pushed out with steam. There's a hot water rinse. There's more steam. There's lots of steam.
This fabulous kegging machine he's talking about costs $300,000, by the way. So when people wonder about the price of beer, it's, you know, you're paying for stuff like that.
You are. And so there are multiple purgings that happen with this keg, and ultimately there's almost no air left in there. So then it's filled with beer, under pressure, and it's a perfect package. It really is. There's almost no air in there, and that keeps the beer fresh. The other difference between draft beer and bottled beer, usually especially large breweries, is that bottled beer is pasteurized, canned beer is generally pasteurized, and draft beer, I think most of the time, is not. You can pasteurize draft beer, but it's usually consumed much more quickly, and there's really no need to do it.
And that's the other big difference, and a very important difference.
It's just fresher.
Right, draft beer is almost is very often kept cold by beer distributors, whereas bottled beer is not. Beer is its own worst enemy in that no pathogens can grow in it. So nothing that hurts you can grow in beer. Beer distributors take that to mean, I can just keep it warm all the time. It doesn't go bad. Beer does go bad. The flavor turns south. And that's why
it gets cardboardy, papery,
honey-like, some metallic. All of these things, you know, you smell a honey sweetness in a beer that's not supposed to be there. The brewer wasn't looking for that. That's because the beer is old.
Unfortunately, though, to keep all that beer cold would drive the price of beer up
even more.
Yeah, even more.
Right.
But George is right. They mostly keep draft beer refrigerated, and draft beer, they're just better at keeping their eye on that and making sure that it turns more quickly. You know, you go to the store and you pull a six-pack off the shelf. You have no idea how long it's been sitting there. Sometimes it's refrigerated. Sometimes it's not. Usually not.
Right. Always buy refrigerated beer if you've got the option.
Well, and don't worry about letting it warm up when you buy it and when you drink it. That doesn't really hurt beer, right, unless you do it many times.
Yeah. And then it only really hurts the appearance. So
The other major difference would be, and it's not as big, but light can affect it as well. I mean,
generally, right? Yeah, and cans don't have that problem.
Yes, but bottles,
bottles do. When light hits beer, it initiates a photochemical reaction that turns some of the hop compounds into the compound that's skunk spray. And so the beer will smell like skunk.
Like Heineken.
Or like that, yeah.
Jack, thank you for calling.
Thank you.
1-800-348-2551. And George, you have passed out your IPA?
Yes, you recognized it. Excellent. Because it's another style. You don't like it. That's fine. This isn't as hoppy as Paul's. This is not a double IPA. This is a normal IPA, about 7.5% alcohol, and still with a big hop nose and significant bitterness. But like
lemon.
Paul, it's got a hop called Amarillo, and I've been changing it every batch, which is this one.
You get less and less every time?
I think this has some Citra in it, Amarillo and Citra.
So two of the rare ones.
Citra too, huh?
I contracted for a few boxes of it last year, and that's how ridiculous hops have become. You have to contract for hops in advance. So if you want to try a new hop, you have to contract for a box. And then if you liked it, well, you have to contract for more of it the next year. You're not going to get any this year.
And pray that some is available.
What's that?
And pray that some is still available.
Right, because hops like Amarillo and Citra, they're not even available. So even if you want to contract in advance, and that's, becoming a pretty big issue. I'm thinking gruits are the next big thing.
They could be.
And what is a gruit?
A beer with virtually no hops.
Yeah. Right, made with spices other than hops.
Hops and beer only, the last 300 or 400 years?
Since 1300 or so. Yeah, okay. So it's like the past 800 years.
Well, it probably took a couple hundred years for it to catch on.
But you're right. It's hard that you do have to contract even for things that you've never tried. There's a hop called Mosaic, which is a new hop that I really would like to try, but I can't.
You can't.
I can't get my hands on it.
In the old days, you just call up, ask for a sample. They'd send it to you.
And then
say,
you tell them what you
okay,
want.
Yes, and I'll buy some of that now.
All right, let's go to Rich in Schenectady and see if we can squeeze in some more. Hi, Rich. Rich? No?
Uh-oh.
All right, I guess we don't have Rich then. Sorry to cut you off then.
It's okay.
And waiting on...
I think she just took another one, though.
I do believe so, too. We're just waiting for everybody to catch up. And then I think we can fit in just the one last one. And let's go to Jessica. Are you there?
Yes.
Hi. What is your... you have a suggestion? What? Go for it.
I'm sorry?
What is your suggestion?
I had a question.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
I was wondering if they could recommend a present to buy for my father, who is brewing beer. I wanted to get him a present because he just started, and I didn't know what to get him. I was wondering if you guys could recommend anything.
Well, as a brewer, I would just say more ingredients. The worst case is it won't be the ones he wants, and he can always probably exchange them for just other types of ingredients.
Don't you sell gift certificates, Russell?
Yeah, but such, gift certificates just doesn't sound as, you know, a gift certificate, you know.
It's nice, though. Then you
so
can go and pick out your own.
So if she was specifically looking for ingredients, like, what are you talking? You're talking about?
Well, it's a kit, you know. It'll have all the hops and the malts, the yeast, basically all the ingredients you would need to brew a batch of beer. If you, like George suggested, we do have gift certificates as well. But there's something about actually having a whole package of something versus getting a piece
an
of paper.
Something to open.
Yeah,
see,
exactly.
Russell's younger than us, and you can't see this on the radio, but Russell's significantly younger than us, and he's obviously
younger
still...
Younger than you, maybe.
He's still into opening the big boxes on Christmas Day.
I sleep in on Christmas.
So one day you get off,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so one day I get off.
So, no, but yeah, he's right. Ingredients would be great. A gift certificate to the homebrew shop would be a fine
I mean, there's always
thing.
Other stuff to get, but then he'd be coming, what does he have? And what doesn't he?
A nice brew kettle.
Yeah.
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 But
yeah,
he might already have one as well. So right. It's
so you may have to go through your father's stash, Jessica.
Right.
But I mean, really, at the end of the day, it's more about the thought than the actual gift.
There you go.
Jessica, thank you for calling. Underwriting support comes from Lori Stillwell, CPA PC, providing tax and accounting services for businesses and their owners in Saratoga Springs and beyond. StillwellCPA.com. Joyelle's Jewelers, Del Mar, New York, specializing in custom jewelry and repair, laser welding, designer jewelry, and gifts. Joyelle'sJewelers.com. And from Lexington Vacuum, Albany, New York, featuring Miele Simplicity, Dyson, Electrolux, Vapori, vapor cleaning, sales, service, repairs, LEXIVAC.com, and from VisitorsTips.com from Berkshire Brochure Display, bringing the content of brochures to the internet. VisitorTips.com. Thank you for joining us on Vox Pop. And next is the news with Patrick Donges.